welcome you to this evening with the forum to listen to the candidates who will be running for the Carbondale mayor. Our hosts this evening are the Soper Sun, Chamber of Commerce, and of course Community Radio KDNK. And this event is being live streamed on KDNK, so we also want to welcome those who are listening on the radio tonight. We're all told, of course, that voting is the heart of our democracy. But when you think about it, it's really voting with some more or less educated sense of the candidates and their positions that really makes democracy thrive. So in that sense, you all know that, and that's why you've come. So we want to, it's a testament, and of course, to your own understanding and your own citizenship that you've taken this step. We want to thank you for that. We also want to welcome, of course, the Mayo candidates who responded to the community invitation to come and share their views. Also, the fact that they're willing to take on the mayor's responsibility if, in fact, they are elected. That's no small thing either. They'll be responding to questions that have come from the community. They'll also, of course, attempt to be very persuasive, which is their responsibility and their duty. Our job, I think, is to try to locate the substance underlying that persuasiveness. So listen as closely as you can, form your opinions. Remember, of course, that it's not always simple to respond to questions you haven't heard before. So depending on their style, some will take more time than others, but we don't hold that against them because we could be in the same position and we all do differently. A few reminders about the ballots itself. If you haven't registered, I'm sure most of you have, but if you haven't, if you didn't receive, for example, a ballot in the mail yesterday, most people did. But you can, in Colorado, register up until the day of the election. If you want to get your ballot mailed to you, you'll need to register by Halloween and then mail it in by the Thursday before. You can mail it in. You can hand deliver it, though, anytime, I believe. Okay? So pass that on for people who may not be aware of it. As far as rules for us here tonight, remember the candidates are here at our request. They've responded to your invitation, so that's important. The questions that are being asked have come from the community. So if you, as you are listening, more or less quietly, we assume, keep in mind that you're actually interacting with them because these are your questions. So obviously pay attention in your own way. If you have your own reaction or response to their answer, which you will, feel free to pinch your neighbor or roll your eyes. But if possible, you know, we really recommend that you take note of what you perceive and store it for the voting. It's your vote that actually makes the contribution. Okay, so candidates will have, by and large, after their introduction, they will have 2 minutes to respond to a question. Your introduction can take up to 4 minutes. They haven't seen the questions. So to be fair, each candidate will start one of the questions and will go to the next candidate for the next question. So it'll balance it out a little bit. If you have cell phones, be good to turn them off. I think we're pretty much ready to begin. You probably know your candidates. We have, starting closest to me, Katrina Byers, Mr. Ed Cortez, and Dan Richardson. Katrina, we'll let them introduce themselves, but you know Katrina is a current trustee. Ed previously has served as a trustee, and Dan is currently serving as the mayor of Carbondale. So we let them, if you take a little bit of time and introduce yourselves to people who don't know you, please feel free to do that now. Katrina, if you'd like to start.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Katrina Byers. I'm a lifelong Roaring Fork Valley resident, and I'm running for mayor because I felt that our town was vulnerable after the resignation of two trustees. Our election cycles are set up so there's some continuity and there's not a
changeover, but we lost five of our seven members because of an election cycle, and some people termed out, some people voted out, and some resignations. So I felt it was really important to hold that continuity of knowledge of long-range issues for our community, because it took me really a long time to develop a grasp for the complexities of what we face as a community, and I feel like I'm in a really strong position to face those along with you. I also ran for mayor because I feel like there is the opportunity for Carbondale to be powered by renewable energy, and we can. I think that we have the opportunity to meet the needs of our senior population who don't have access to public transportation. RAFTA does not go by the senior housing. There's a shortage of senior housing with over 100 people on the waiting list. There's no senior nutrition programs like Meals on Wheels. There's no transportation for our seniors. And in my view, this is a kind of community neglect. And so I think we need to face these issues head on right now as our demographics are shifting. And these are not only the people who built our community, but they're an essential part of our community still today. I also am running for mayor because I think it's an opportunity to bring the most important issues to the front of the public consciousness so that, you know, regardless of outcome of a campaign, it's an opportunity for us to look at and address some really important problems in our community. One of those is lack of ADA playground equipment in our parks. This is non-compliant, but it's also not equality for the over 300 children in our region, ages 0 to 6, that are in wheelchairs. So we have an amazing skate park, bike park. We are not serving that population of children, so that's really important. It's also important that all people of our community have safe passage through our bike and pedestrian corridors day or night, and I think we have an opportunity to improve those conditions, which is something I think the whole community is kind of looking at and working on right now. And I should have written a little bullet point list, but those are the things that are really important to me. And of course, not above all things, but first in my mind is always our water source and protection of our water source. And we were successful as a community in showing the impacts to oil and gas development, the Thompson Divide, were going to be too harsh for our community. And those leases are awaiting cancellation in Washington right now. However, our watershed is not permanently protected. Those cancellations are on a 20-year management plan from the BLM. And so through the state and other federal guidelines, there are some protections that we need to make sure that this water that we have, that we've had for since Carbondale was founded, stays clean and pure for another 7 generations at least, so that you know, we're planning into the future to make sure it's as wonderful as it is now in the future. Thanks.
Sure. Good evening, folks. My name is Ed Cortez, and I'm running for Carbondale mayor. The question I get asked more often is, why do you want to get back into town politics? I'm passionate about Carbondale, my neighbors, and the prosperity of our community, of which I've been a part of for over 20 years. A couple of people asked a friend of mine, John Folkrod, why he's voting for Ed Cortez for mayor. He responded that he's voting for Ed because Ed is old school. What does old school mean? To me, old school means not burdening the taxpayers with frivolous or thoughtless taxation, reaching our environmental goals with multiple strategies that are equitable to all, assuring our citizens safe streets with a responsive approach to safety, and preserving our middle class with policies that support our economic diversity. If that's what old school means, then yes, I am old school. John also said he's supporting Ed because Ed's not afraid to piss off people. And by that, I believe he meant that I'm not afraid to ask the hard questions and hold people accountable, including myself. It's the job of the mayor to meet the challenges of the town through consensus. However, the solutions are not always easy, and sometimes uncomfortable. Leadership is a quality that requires responsiveness. As mayor of Carbondale, I bring experience, leadership, tenacity, transparency, and accountability to the table. I believe these are the qualities that separate me from my opponents. Please vote Ed Cortez, Carbondale Mayor. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks to our sponsors, the Chamber, KD&K, and the Soper Sun for putting this on. Thanks to the candidates, for Katrina and Ed, for throwing your hat in the ring and making this a race. I don't always agree with your assessments of how things are going now, but I think it keeps us all honest, as you say. So thank you. And thanks to the audience who are here participating, voting, engaging in this discussion. I often say how much I love local governance, which sounds a little crazy, but to me this is what it's all about, that we can have this debate, that we can have a dialogue in a room this size and talk about the issues that really matter, not so much the big ones that we hear about. So I love this. Quick background, as Jim said, I'm acting mayor right now. How did that come to be? Why are we voting for mayor again? This spring, I was voted in as a trustee. I was immediately, I was honored by the board to be appointed mayor pro tem, with the exception of Katrina. And that meant a lot to me. When Stacy stepped down, it meant that I became acting mayor. Now we have to vote for that official position. It's been kind of a whirlwind 6 to 9 months. I say 9 months because the election plus the 6 months being acting mayor. It wasn't quite what I expected. Sometimes it feels like 6 days. Sometimes it feels like 6 years. But at the end of the day, it's been fun. One of the reasons it's been fun is because of these boys sitting up here, my two sons. They're pretty engaged. And if you watch any of the meetings, they're often at one of the meetings, not because I make them come, but because they enjoy it. And when we get home, they ask the questions, and that sort of forces me to be clear about the issues, about the process. They ask me, why'd you vote for this, Dad? Why'd you do this? Why did so-and-so say this? And it really, to me, speaks to what being mayor is all about, that it's the job of the mayor to bring that clarity, to be honest, to be accountable, because at the end of the day, the buck stops with the mayor. So thank you, boys. It's been an interesting experience. But in addition to that, it's more than that as well. It's the work. It's not only being willing to do the work, but it's knowing what the work is. Sometimes the work is doing the work before the meeting and calling to make sure the right people are going to be at the meeting. It's making sure that we're discussing the right question and discussing the right answers. Sometimes it's about being in the meeting when things may go your way or they may not, and you got to have the presence of mind to still empower the other trustees so that their voice is heard, empower the public so that their voice is heard, but still get to an efficient, effective decision, which is our job, is to provide that strategic discussion. Sometimes the work is talking to staff and maybe disagreeing with their recommendation or asking them to dig a little deeper so that we can have an informed discussion. So it's knowing what that work is. It's the emotional intelligence to understand people. It's having the relationships. So when you do need to call those people, that they respect you and you respect them. It's understanding who to call under the right circumstance so that, again, you can get to the right solution. And it's about listening. Tonight, we'll probably talk about our priorities, our individual priorities. But really, for me, being mayor is not about my priorities. Sure, the buck stops with the mayor. The mayor can control the meeting. But if it's my agenda, we're not really going to go very far. It's about making sure the agenda is, there's common agreement and there's common purpose. 30 seconds, thank you. So to me, that's what being mayor is all about. I certainly haven't done a perfect job, I can tell you that. But I will tell you that the relationships I have now are stronger now than they were 6 months ago. And I have been willing to have those difficult discussions and still have strong relationships with them after the fact. So I've really enjoyed being acting mayor. I'm honored that I have the support of the Board of Trustees, with the exception of Katrina, to continue being mayor, because I think that's essential, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Okay, well, let's begin with our questions and answers. As I mentioned, the candidates have not seen the questions, but they've come from the community, and because they haven't seen them, we'll each person will respond to the same question, but let's start on this end if we can. And the second question will go to Ed, and the third question to Dan, and then complete the cycle. Okay? All right. You'll have 2 minutes, up to 2 minutes to respond, and you've just heard the beeper. And as an educator, I can also remind you that when you're talking, when teachers talk, they assume that the more they teach, the more you'll learn, but it doesn't always work that way. So feel comfortable cutting it short if you're at the end of what you want to say. Okay, our first question, Katrina, if you would start us off. It's a large question of development and growth. And the question asks for your vision of Carbondale's future. And if you can be as specific as you can, tell us how much the town should grow and in what directions. Include the kind of housing mix there should be and what kind of businesses should be invited to build and to thrive here.
One of the complaints I've heard over the last month or so is people who feel like they're part of Carbondale but don't get to vote in the Carbondale election. Our town limits are pretty small. People who live in Satank, people who live just past RVR, people who really feel like they're in town and are connected to the town, both economically through the water system and various other tie-ins, don't feel connected. There was a water conservation plan that we looked at that had potential future annexations for Carbondale that were based on annexations for our water system, basically. So obviously nobody should ever be annexed into Carbondale if they don't want to, but I do think it makes sense for us to expand our boundaries if people outside of the boundaries do want to tie into our infrastructure and do want to participate in the community in that way. So that's one piece. The other piece is the type of development, which I think one of the things that has made Carbondale strong and has helped us maintain our community character and integrity is a diversity of economic and cultural viewpoints. And so I think that our housing future should reflect that, and any future development should be inclusive of all economic strata and encourage low-income, middle-income, working-income housing in addition to some of the high-end places we have. You know, we need everyone participates in this community, and everybody has something to give. So I think a focus on diversity is really important. And with regard to commercial development, you know, we get a majority of our tax base from a single tax provider, and that's City Market. That's a tax on food. And while we're lucky to have that because our entire town operations are based on that, I think a more diverse tax base with more small independent businesses of all different types is the direction we want to go, not only through development but also through economic development. So I think an eye towards diversity, inclusivity, and careful growth is the direction I think we should go. Thanks.
Same question? Yes. No, I know exactly how to answer that. First of all, I want to say that Katrina mentioned that the City Market is a majority of our tax revenues, and actually it's only 30% of our tax revenues. And people have said with City Market moving to its new location that may be the answer to our economic future. Well, it's not. Because all we're doing is moving the tax base from one location to another part of town. So we're still going to have that 30% tax revenues from City Market. The City Market will be an expanded store. I went to visit last couple of years of my tenure as trustee when we were battling the last go-round for development of that property. I visited Grand Junction and saw the store that we're going to get here. It's a great store. However, it's not going to be the end of our economic woes. I think that development is something that somehow we need to as a town, reach consensus which direction we're going to go with development. And that's been, and as Katrina said, that's been pretty much the emphasis of my campaign is to be more exclusive, and just, you know, we have to include everybody, our neighbors, everyone that's involved in town, because I believe that the last go round when we had the tax initiatives that not enough of us were really informed about what those goals were and what the details were of those tax initiatives, which is why I oppose them, even though I am very supportive of sustainability. So, you know, as we talk about, you know, what the boundaries are, you know, when I was in planning and zoning and Frosty's back there, we were both there together, we started the infill process. And that the philosophy of infill was to keep development within the boundaries, the city limits of town, so that we wouldn't expand beyond our boundaries and keep sprawl limited. And basically, I believe that we need to develop, but we need to do it smartly. And I think that with the groups that we have involved in our town, that we can do this and do this correctly and satisfy everyone's, you know, whatever their political views are, we should be able to do this because we really need to figure a way of how we're going to move forward in the future.
Thanks, Jim. You mentioned vision for development and growth, and I think it was fun this spring thinking about what makes Carbondale, Carbondale. What are our greatest assets? And clearly, to me, the surrounding open space is like no other town in Colorado, and I think that's an incredible asset for us. So as Ed mentioned, I think infill is really a priority for Carbondale. It's not to say we can't expand, because unfortunately, I think not all the land is in conservation easement, but I think, where we want to devote our efforts. But that's not my vision. That's the vision that's already in our comprehensive plan. It's in the Unified Development Code, which the previous board adopted. So I think that vision is already really laid out, and it's our job to make sure that new growth fits that vision. With respect to the housing mix, I'm not really the guy to answer that question. But fortunately, we have P&Z, who has helped us think through this. We had a great work session on affordable housing earlier this year, and we talked about there was common agreement that we need a needs assessment to figure out what type of housing we need. It doesn't mean we need to go spend a lot of money on a study, but I don't think anybody really knows what's missing. It seems pretty clear to me that we're lacking that entry-level housing, whether it's ownership or rental housing. That seems pretty obvious to me. But we're also seeing developments proposed that are responding to that right now, which I can talk about more in detail later. So I'm pretty encouraged that some of those projects are coming down the pipe. With respect to businesses, clearly the ones that exist now are the ones that should be a priority. I think retail is important for our for government revenue, but I think more important are businesses that are going to provide jobs. There are a handful of businesses in town that provide a lot of good paying jobs. And to me, that doesn't necessarily create direct revenue for the town, but it builds a stronger community. So I think in the mix, retail is part of it, but creating better local jobs and more local jobs is very important. So,
thank you. Well, we'll start this next question with Ed. It's okay. It's a follow-up somewhat to the question of housing. The question goes, recruiting and retaining smart, skilled employees is increasingly challenging as housing gets less and less affordable. Would you tell us your plan for addressing Carbondale's acute shortage of affordable housing? And also let us know, what are the implications of your response for the town's socioeconomic evolution?
Well, housing is a subject that we've been debating now since the days that I was in planning and zoning, and we're going on to 15 years, and we still don't have an answer to it. We have no affordable housing. We have attainable housing. We have deed-restricted housing, but we really have never had affordable housing. Right now, we have no inventory to offer other than what's available now, and when people try to get into those homes, you know, we have a lottery that's with a 40 to 50 people waiting to hopefully move into some of the inventory homes that we have. I'm a renter. And and fortunately for me, that just recently I will cease to be a renter at the end of this month. But you know, it's the recession wiped out a lot of people, and a lot of people are suffering, and a lot of people like myself cannot afford to get affordable housing. I had to go into the free market, and I was very lucky. But there's still a lot of people that are renting who would like to get into any type of ownership of a home. I know that Katrina has always been an advocate for housing. But getting back to the types of people who would be moving into this house, you know, we talked about, I read in the paper that one of the trustees was talking about critical employees. And yes, that's always been a subject for conversation about who is going to move into affordable housing when we have it. But a critical employee to me is the man who or woman who stacks the produce at City Market, the bus driver. Everyone in Carbondale, to me, is a critical person, and there shouldn't be any segregation on who gets the affordable housing when and if we get it. And once again, at some point in time, I do have a plan for affordable housing for Carbondale, but obviously I'm almost out of time, and we'll do it a little bit later.
Okay. Tough question. So tough that this is another one that I don't really have all the answers for. But because of that, what I did was the board agreed that we needed to have a work session on affordable housing earlier this summer. This was some of the work that I was talking about. I really thought about who needed to be at the table to answer this question. So we had a work session with full planning and zoning. Guys like Bill Lamont, who have put a lot of energy into this topic, Garfield County Housing Authority, Habitat for Humanity, developers, they were all in the room, and it was one of the best discussions I've ever had about something as tough as affordable housing. And we came up with some tangible things. One, we said, let's not let this die. Let's keep talking about it. Tuesday night, there was a work session on rental housing guidelines. That was one of the priorities that we needed to address, because rental housing was one of the things that we agreed just didn't exist. Secondly, we talked about a needs assessment. We saw a proposal for that needs assessment on Tuesday as well. Partnering with the private sector, we have the developer at the table. With the adoption of the UDC, which I can take absolutely no credit for, I think we've seen a groundswell of interest in developing private sector affordable housing, which we've got a couple projects that are in the pipeline. Some of them are waiting for City Market to develop. Some of them have been in the pipeline, like Thompson Park, that are now starting to happen. We saw Cooper Corner develop. And I think just with the changes in the UDC, we're seeing more ADUs being applied for, which to me is good affordable housing. So there's no chance that we would have seen a fundamental shift in the last 6 months of affordable housing. But I think as the market has increased with the adoption of the UDC, we are seeing a shift in viable, attainable housing that's coming to fruition. We're also likely going to create a small affordable housing fund with some reserves this year, which I think makes sense, not to spend it, but to just dedicate it to that. So I think we've taken some good steps, and those are my thoughts.
Do you mind repeating the question?
Sure. Starts off, that recruiting and retaining smart, skilled employees is increasingly challenging as housing gets less and less attainable. Would you tell us your plan for addressing Carbondale's acute shortage of affordable housing? And remind us, too, what are the implications of your response for the town's socioeconomic development?
Thank you. I've heard that sentiment from both private businesses and public entities that are struggling to keep their valuable employees, school teachers, police officers, shoe salesmen, baristas, you know, just like Ed mentioned, these are community members, and we're losing them. One I just saw the other day in the paper that out of our VRBOs, they had seen the short-term rentals, that only three homes were displaced and turned into short-term rentals. But, you know, I think anywhere where we're losing vital community members, we're losing part of what Carbondale's strength is. We have a very small budget, half of Basalt's budget, and I think 5% of Aspen's budget. We run things on a shoestring, and we do it because of the volunteerism and community strength that has always defined Carbondale. You know, I feel like sometimes we do more on our little bit of money than much, much larger communities, and that's because of the buy-in and ownership of this community by the members of this community. And so I don't want to lose people to economic tension around the housing department. So anyway, specifically, my plan for affordable housing would be to take part of our capital fund reserve that we're transferring this year, combine it with the $50,000 that we have for our employee housing option, leverage that funding with money that Garfield County said that they would release to CHAFA to initiate an affordable housing project. A smart person told me there's no such thing as affordable housing, only subsidized housing, and I think that can be true. Eagle County did a project where they invested $2 million in an affordable housing project, and they made $10 million back, and every unit was filled, and I think we can do the same thing here. And whether or not we make $10 million on it, the implications of it are that we can retain the community residents that keep this community thriving. Thanks.
Ed, you had a question?
I was going to ask, you know, this is such an important topic, and if the other candidates don't mind, I think that we need to respond a little bit further on this issue, because this is so critical that I believe that the audience needs to know exactly, you know, which direction we as candidates are going and how we might respond to things that were said that may or not be all that accurate.
Ask the audience what you feel. The rest of the questions also came from the community. Do you feel that this one has more importance or special importance, or would you like to hear the rest of the questions first? Let's see what you guys continue on, and we'll try to find some time. Maybe okay. Even include it. The next question, for example, and we want to mention to any KDNK listeners who just tuned in that you're listening to the forum for the mayoral candidate in Carbondale. We've only missed a few minutes of it. We're on our third question. And the third question, which will go to Dan first, it's a pretty specific question. It asks, Carbondale has a healthy general fund reserve. This reserve can be seen as a savings account for when revenues decrease or special needs arise, but it also could cover 100% of the town's general fund operations for a year if needed. Question for you is, can you identify what special need you see that might justify drawing down reserves in the ongoing budgetary process, and how much in reserves might you be comfortable drawing down?
Sure. So as Jim mentioned, our reserves are somewhere between three quarters and a full year's worth of operating funds. Is there a common metric out there of what's safe? Not really, because we're dependent upon really two large retail sources. It makes sense for us to have a healthier reserve than it does for other communities who might have more diversity, like an Aspen or a Glenwood Springs. So I think previous trustees have done a great job of building up those reserves during good times. I'm very hesitant to draw down those reserves for a couple different reasons. The financial picture is a little unclear. I wish I could say that city market was going to be built right now, but we still don't have a shovel in the ground. We're seeing reduced revenue from oil and gas. We're seeing Garfield County reduce our road and bridge mill levy contribution. So to me, it makes sense. To me, that also provides security. Our reserves provide security for the community as well as our staff if things do go south. So I'm very hesitant to draw into those reserves, particularly for O&M. Having said that, to answer the question, why would I draw down a reserve? I think there are a couple things. Certainly, if there's an emergency, if our major revenue source went away, or if we needed to invest in something that perhaps our water and wastewater funds could not cover at that time in order to keep the water flowing, but not for O&M. And I have seen some towns do that, and it's incredibly dangerous. What we're doing with the housing fund, just to clarify that, is we're really just moving some funds from our general reserve to a housing fund. We're still maintaining a fund balance of that three quarters, which I think makes sense because we can still use those funds when an opportunity arises. Also, for me, if there's a sound investment, so we're not necessarily reducing our overall assets, but there's a good investment we can make, we could do that. Right now, I don't know what that is. We don't have any proposals. So for the most part, I would say let's keep our reserves right where they are right now.
Do you mind just reading the whole thing?
Carbondale has a healthy general fund reserve, and the reserve can be seen in one way as a savings account for when revenues decrease or special needs arise. It could essentially cover 75 to 100% of the town's general fund operations also for a year, if needed. So can you identify what special need that you see might justify drawing down reserves, and how much in reserves might you be comfortable drawing down?
Thank you. Our reserves are our savings account, and we all survived the Great Recession in which we had to make massive cuts that have not been brought back in our town operations. We have a smaller police department now than we did before that downturn hit. So it really is wise to keep money in that account. After our audit that was a couple of months ago, that was a full report on our standing, it was reported that we have 101% of our operating budget in our prudent reserve. So that means there's a little bit over a year worth of money in that reserve. At our last town trustee meeting, we talked about our budget, and one of the allocations in the budget is a transfer of $500,000 from our prudent reserve to our capital fund. So you remember there was a tax question on the capital fund. I don't necessarily think that taxes are a good way for us to meet the needs when we have other opportunities. And so from the capital fund, affordable housing can be drawn. So it's a potential for us to invest in affordable housing along with some other capital and infrastructure needs that are coming upon us. Some of our water infrastructure, sidewalks, I know many of you know, are in need of repair. And after that 101% report, there was talk of investing some of our money in mutual funds. And to me, if we're going to be taxing our community, I don't think that money should go into that kind of savings and investment. I think we should have a prudent reserve of at least 75%. That's a 9-month operating budget, which means if the ground completely falls out and we don't make another dollar, we can run for nine whole months. And with the rest, I think we need to invest in the critical needs of our community that are both attainable housing and really important capital projects, including our water infrastructure that are coming on. We need a new water filtration plant at Crystal River. That's a project that is being planned right now, and we need to be ready for that stuff. So, $500,000 is a large allocation, and I do think that the community should give feedback on in terms of what you want to see come out of reserve and go into community investment. We don't get a lot of comments on our budget, but this is big stuff. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Well, I am absolutely against tapping into, I call it the emergency fund. I call it an emergency fund because I've been a trustee when we had emergencies. I spoke at the time, the town manager was Tom Baker, and I had a talk with him, and I had a talk with Stacy, and Stacy had a talk with him. And this was a year before the recession hit, and we said, you need to really fall back on our expenditures. You need to cut back anywhere from 5 to 10%, because I just had a feeling something was going to happen. Everything was just going too well. I mean, everyone was making so much money. The town had all kinds of money, and they were spending all kinds of money the wrong way, in my opinion, in some instances. But the recession hit. We had to reduce our workforce, our town workforce, by 3 people, very good people. But the town was able to survive it. And, I feel that, this boom that we're having now is at some point going to not last. So we need to be prepared. We always need to be prepared. I would always be against tapping into the emergency fund unless it is an emergency. Now, we're getting back to using some of those funds for capital improvements or housing. Well, $500,000 is a lot of money. It's a lot of money to me, and it's a lot of money to you. But really, in the grand scheme of things, is $500,000 a lot of money for affordable housing when the average free market house is $425,000? No, we need to be able to, when we talk about housing, we're going to have to look at this regionally. We're going to have to talk to all the jurisdictions within the Roaring Fork Valley and figure out, because everyone's having the same problem, and figure out how we're going to cope with this. And going into the emergency funds to do that for that small amount is not going to work, and we're going to deplete our emergency fund. If we're going to use emergency funds, we need to use it for lighting, to light up the dark areas in our town, to light up the Rio Grande Trail, and take care of the citizens who are afraid, our female citizens who are afraid to walk the streets at night. That's what we need to be concentrating on right now if we're going to spend emergency funds.
Terrific. Everybody doing okay still? It's a lot of information from some pretty interesting candidates, so we can hang in there. We've got the next question, which would go back to Katrina, I believe. Okay. It's a fairly short one, simple one. The town has a large number of advisory boards and commissions. Do you feel it has an excess number of advisory boards and commissions? And if so, which ones might you want to see eliminated or combined with another one?
That's a good question. I think we have 11 advisory boards, which is extraordinarily high for a community. As I mentioned earlier, our community engagement, participation, and volunteerism is why we achieve so many great things in our town. So I wouldn't say there's too many. There was a time that I thought that the tree board should be combined with the parks board because the trees are in the parks, but it's a little bit more complicated than that, and I think it is good to have expert boards that can look over community decisions and determine impacts and unintended consequences that we can't see from the position that we're in. So I did want to add one advisory board, actually, and that was one for the Spanish-speaking community because they're not represented on any level in our town government. So I would actually not only not decrease, but I would add that one if I could.
Porque yo los represento. But Katrina's right. This is a community of participation. And frankly, the trustees are so overwhelmed with what it takes to run a town that even if there are 11 boards and commissions, I believe we need every single solitary one because, you know, as we all know, you know, we can't make the right decisions unless we have the proper information to be able to make those decisions. And in the past, I felt that our boards have always been so helpful for us making those decisions that I would be against reducing them. In any case, I feel that if something comes up, some new issue comes up that requires community participation, you know, I believe that, you know, if we have to add to those commissions, we should just do it because the more information we get, the better we'll be able to make the decisions that we need to make to keep this town going and to make this town prosper.
Thanks, Jim. Sounds like we have some common agreement here because I feel the same way. I think committees and commissions are essentially the grassroots element of government, and if there are enough people who feel passionate about an issue, then go for it. The only reason I would recommend reducing or eliminating one is if it's clearly ineffective or it's impairing our ability to govern the way we should, and that's clearly not the case right now. So I would agree with Ed and Katrina that it seems like we're in a sweet spot right now. And I would also say that I've been very impressed. We've put some questions out to the boards and commissions, and, man, there are some thoughtful people, whether it's the bike, ped, and trails that we asked about lighting, P&Z that's been doing an amazing job, Parks and Rec who did a fantastic job creating a master plan. Katrina mentioned the tree board. I mean, there's some passionate people about trees. So I think that's been a great realization to see how effective our boards and commissions have been. So thank you.
Another fairly local question that has national echoes to it. It says, the trustees hear annual requests for funding from nonprofits. Do the applicants from nonprofits have to divulge their director's salaries? And if not, should they? Can we start with Ed?
Well, we're talking funds that are provided by the taxpayers. And I believe that transparency is critical if the town is going to give grants to nonprofits. I believe that the town should be getting a full disclosure of what that nonprofit's financial status is, a balance sheet, and I know that they're nonprofits, but some kind of profit and loss, so that we can determine whether or not the what we want the monies to go for are going to be spent in that direction. O&M obviously is something that we would be against, but you know, I believe that that accountability, that's part of that accountability, is you know, if they want to be funded by the town, they need to be accountable to the town for whatever their expenditures are, whatever their plans are, and that's how I feel about it.
No, now they're not required to do so. Should they be? I think it's up to a board to create the rules for any type of funding request. And right now we haven't created that rule. We haven't said thou shalt report your executive director's salary. So no, I don't think they should right now. I certainly agree with Ed that if an organization is requesting funding, then we need to understand the organization, how they're spending their funding, what it's going to. And to me, the level of accountability is directly proportional to the amount of funding and our comfort level with them. But at the end of the day, like I said, it comes down to us creating the rules so that folks know. And to me, the executive director's salary is no more important than how they operate and how they spend that money on other things as well. So,
In my view, I think that the work that is done by nonprofits in our community and beyond are meeting critical needs that government and other agencies aren't able to meet. We give part of our nonprofit grants to treatment centers for child victims of abuse, to places that preserve wilderness, to trails. You know, there's a spectrum of nonprofits that request funds from us. We allocate $4.5 million in our budget, and it is, I think, $65,000 that we allocate to nonprofits. And I think that money goes into the community in a way that is really meaningful, and we see a really significant impact from, not only because many of these nonprofits are, in fact, job creators in our community, but because of the important services they're serving. To me, it's not important what the executive director makes in the consideration. What's important to me is what they're going to do with the money. And, you know, the descriptions we have before us, I think, are fair in allocating those funds. So I think the system we have is okay. I think it would be okay to increase that allocation to include more nonprofits. There have been a couple of years that some nonprofits were denied their funding requests, and often their funding requests are not fully met. But we do look at what the impact of the community is and how we can do the most good with those funds, and to me that's the most important thing.
Thank you all. We're almost halfway, if that helps. And we have another question now. We move some nonprofits back to the city. It says that some say, and this would be starting with Dan, some say that Carbondale's infrastructure, your streets, sidewalks, sewer and water, parks and playgrounds, are in fairly poor shape. Do you agree with that? And if you happen to agree, what can the town do to come up with money to make repairs to these kinds of facilities, and how soon?
Gosh, how much do I want to bore the audience? This is what I do. I work for SGM, an engineering firm, and I consult with municipalities on mostly infrastructure, capital improvement plans, asset management. So I spend a lot of time looking at other towns' infrastructure. And to say our infrastructure is in poor condition is really, it's all relative, you know, compared to what? And compared to what our expectations are. In Carbondale, it's a little unique. You know, we don't expect to have 6-foot sidewalks on either side of every street, which I think is wonderful. There are some parts of town where the infrastructure is in poor condition and some where it's not. Kudos to the previous trustees 20 years ago who invested in concrete streets. That saved all of us a lot of money. But there is a useful life to those streets. There is going to be some repair and replacement that's going to be necessary, and that concerns me. I think with respect to water and wastewater, those are enterprise funds. Those kind of operate as businesses. And I think those are, to talk about the water treatment plant that Katrina mentioned, you know, we have those funds available to us, and I think that's good. What makes me really nervous about our capital funding, our infrastructure spending in the future, is that we're so reliant on retail sales tax. So if something were to happen with infrastructure, something catastrophic, or if something happened to the another recession, we wouldn't be able to invest like we could. So that's why I did support the capital tax to diversify that funding source. Do we need a lot more? No, I don't think so. I think the town has been relatively prudent in its planning for that infrastructure. But I do worry that we've built out infrastructure, and this is true for all of Western Colorado. We've built and built and built, and I don't know if our funding structures are really set up to maintain going forward. So I think there's some work to be done there.
I think in Carbondale we have 24 parks, and I, on a very slim crew, maintain them really pretty well. I wouldn't say that our parks are in poor condition. I think they're lovely. There are a couple that I think that need some upgrades. I mentioned the 88 park equipment already. The ones that are of greatest concern to me are our river frontage parks. And we own miles of riverfront property that are our public parks. Those within those parks, 75% of the riparian, which is the filtration plant life that grows along the river, is severely degraded, and that affects not only our stream water quality but also our drinking water quality, and we have to add more chlorine to our drinking water when there's increased turbidity or minerals in the water because of that degraded riparian. So if I were to prioritize, it would be the ADA equipment and improvement in our riparian, and there's actually some Clean Water Drinking Act grants that we can use to repair our riparian zone in Carbondale. And it's like that with so many things. We go after a lot of LiveWell grants that are small grants between $10,000 and $50,000. Some of them have matches, but we're constantly improving our parks through those grants. With regard to parks infrastructure and affordable housing, I've had the opportunity to talk to Department of Local Affairs and the State Economic Director and other state and federal sources that are there to help municipalities meet these needs when there's shortfalls. We're not the only community that's very, very tiny, and it's hard for us to meet these needs. So, you know, for our infrastructure, for our parks, for our river frontage, all of that, there are some additional sources outside of our budget that we can pursue.
Well, this goes back to economic development, folks. Dan mentioned the town is what our revenue sources are, sales tax generated, and since I've left the board and the beginning of this new board's tenure, you know, I have seen or I have heard no discussions on economic development, and that goes back to what Katrina was saying. You know, we were talking about infrastructure, and then she got off on other issues that need to be addressed with the town. We don't have the money to do it, and we need to figure a way of how we're going to be able to do this. And it's not going to be an easy task, and it's not going to be done overnight. Don't fool yourselves. It's not going to be done overnight. We need to start an economic development plan that will discuss everything that we need to have to make sure that the town is able to function, from streets, the wastewater. It's got its own fund. The enterprise fund is, I believe, when I left, was in real good shape, and I believe it's still in pretty good shape, but is it not? And, of course, if we decide to put in a new water plant, you know, we can bond for that. But I've always felt that, as far as taxes are concerned, there's no reason to burden the taxpayers with more taxes unless, and I've always said this, and I've said this 15 years ago, that this town is such a together town that if we needed to, in an emergency, to come up with some kind of a tax to be able to take care of infrastructure or whatever needed to be done as an emergency, that this town would come together and we would be able to do that. But we don't. We want to avoid it as much as possible. I think we can do that on our own. I think that we can come up with plans that will alleviate some of these problems without burdening the taxpayers anymore, because I'm a taxpayer now. I've always been a taxpayer, but I just purchased a place, and I don't know if I can afford to pay any more taxes. I don't know if any of us can afford to pay any more taxes, because what's going to happen is we're going to drive out the middle class. They're going to move down to Rifle, and believe me, I don't want to live in Rifle.
Well, let's keep on with the question of the sales tax base, because each of you has mentioned the need to balance it or maybe to grow it. So the question comes up and says, how do you balance the need to diversify and grow the tax base Balance that with the proven and vocal disinclination of many Carbondale residents that Carbondale not become just another big box, mall-driven community. Thank you, Katrina.
Big boxes aren't the only kind of business. I think one of our lead employers in Carbondale is small industrial, actually. So in my mind, I think the thing that we can best do to support our own tax base is shop locally. One of the things that is a potential change for the upcoming city market is that many people leave Carbondale and go to Whole Foods and in Willits and Glenwood Springs to buy groceries and other items, and so that tax base goes to those communities. So one of the most powerful things we can do to enhance our own tax base is to shop locally for everything. I try to make a point of it myself. So that's one piece of it. And as I mentioned earlier, I think a diversity of businesses, and I don't think Carbondale is not interested in having businesses. I think that we just want to maintain the independent quality of our community so that it's not big sort of generic stores coming in and displacing small community or family-owned businesses, but that, in fact, we can uplift and increase the number of those types of businesses. There is some encouragement in that type of development in the UDC that makes things more simple. We have other opportunities like, for example, when the distillery opened, we took a payment plan on the tap fees for that place. So it's things like that we can do to support small businesses as they're getting going. And I think also where we have these economic or we have these grants that go to nonprofits, I think it would be a really profound act to have grants that could go to small businesses so that they could buy necessary equipment or upgrades to expand their own businesses. So coming from a perspective that, you know, we actually have the power as a community to support independent local small businesses, increase the number of them, invest in them, and shop locally. And if we do that, we're not going to need more taxes. We're going to be self-supporting. So thanks.
In 2015, Carbondale had an increase in revenues of from 5 to 6%, which on a municipal level is not that bad. It's not that good when you compare it to the rest of the valley, which are all booming and have some, most of them have double-digit increases in their revenues. But the thing that scares me the most is in 2015 when they had that increase in revenues, why did the board initiate $1 million tax initiative to burden the taxpayers of this town with? And to me, it has to do with not very good planning. And this is all comes back to economic development. You know, as most everyone here who's been here for a while know that I'm not necessarily against bringing in outside commercial interest to stimulate the town and create more local businesses, because that's the allure of, and I don't want to use a magnet store, but it would be a magnet store. It doesn't necessarily have to be a big box, but it would be something that would draw people in town. First of all, we need to make sure that the shoppers in town stay in town and spend their money in town. Believe it or not, folks, we're still leaking out 76 cents out of every dollar. You know, that's still a reality. And you can say that, and like we can do that just based on this 5 or 6% increase that forced the trustees to try and impose a $1 million tax increase for us. Something is wrong somewhere. First thing I'm going to do is find out why we needed to spend or tax the citizens $1 million when they had an increase. We're going to patch that hole, figure out what our next step is going to be. I've always been a proponent for a business improvement district, and hopefully we'll talk about that later, and because that could be used as the beginnings of how we might be able to create a better idea for our business development plan.
Thanks, Jim. I often get college students asking to talk about career paths and what do they want to be when they grow up, and I always go back to understand who you are and be what you want to be. Do what you want to do. And I think Carbondale has done that better than any town I know. I think with the Village of Crystal River and the Marketplace projects, I think the town spoke. You know, we don't want to be a regional marketplace for the sake of being a regional marketplace. And I hear that, having been born in Glenwood and been on city council when Glenwood Meadows came through, there are clear impacts. And I don't think Carbondale is intended to be a regional marketplace. Having said that, we need to support the businesses that we have, and we are in Colorado sales tax junkies. But as I said earlier, I think that mix is more employment than it is retail tax base, because I think that's where Carbondale's strength is in our community and providing good jobs. So those are the businesses that I think, as Ed said, we really need to focus on in economic development. As Katrina mentioned, we've offered loans to small businesses, and it's been great. I don't want to disclose who and what, but you look at the businesses that have sometimes taken out multiple loans, and they're thriving now. So I think we have done some things to really support the businesses in a cost-effective way, and we need to continue to do that. An interesting question that's happening now is we are seeing some landowners request to change commercial to residential, and that could really affect our tax base in the future. But nonetheless, we're seeing that the market is saying this should be residential and not commercial. So that's a big question. I don't know the answer to that, but it's part of that bigger equation of what's better for the community, not necessarily for our revenue coffers. Thanks.
Let's move to a question that has recently been a topic of discussion in the community and has elicited some fairly strong feelings. We'll start with Ed, if you would. Would you tell us your position on what might be done with regard to lighting of streets and trails throughout Carbondale, specifically in terms of safety, but keeping in mind the desire to preserve views of the night sky from light pollution as well?
Frankly, I was on the board many years ago when that subject came up, and that's the one about preserving our night skies. And it's very important to me, and it's very important to many people in this town. However, as the town evolves, there are certain demands that, you know, at some point in time, we're going to have to come up with compromises. And that compromise is by keeping our night skies, do we want to sacrifice safety in the streets? And that's something that's a subject that's very near and dear to me. I had some people who were very supportive of some of my statements, and some people who were not supportive of my statements when I took a stand for the ladies who felt that the board was not responsive to their concerns. Recently, one of the trustees, it was quoted in the paper, was saying that what I was saying is, you know, we need to do something immediately, you know, police coming out and patrolling the areas, police walking the areas, bicycle police. And I'm curious why we didn't offer a $5,000 reward for any information leading to the capture of the predator who caused these crimes. At that time, had we done something, maybe through a tip, we might not have this conversation today. But actually, it is a conversation because the trails in some neighborhoods are so dark, they scare me also. And at this point in time, I'm really concerned that is something that we really need to focus on. That's what I consider an emergency. That's what I consider a reason for us to go into an emergency fund to figure out how we're going to do this. But by hiring a lighting consultant, we don't have to do that because RAFTA has already done this. They've done the research. What we need to do is contact, and I already talked to Mr. Blankenship about this, and no one has talked to him about this, and he's willing to talk to Carbondale in reference to this issue. But actually, this is a systemic problem because we all know the Rio Grande Trail starts in Glenwood and it ends in Aspen.
Thanks, Jim. This was a hard issue when this came before the board. It's kind of the classic example of to me, the mayor having to respond to an issue that is incredibly personal for a lot of people, but it's also big in scope. And what's our role as the Board of Trustees? What can we do? How should we do it? And who do we engage? So I won't lie by saying it wasn't hard. The way I responded and the way I think the solutions that the board has brought forward, I think, are appropriate. And I think we took a good approach, which I'll explain. Immediately we heard, we need lights right now. We need more lights around town. The initial response was the Rio Grande Trail. We need to light the Rio Grande Trail. But I personally thought that this is a big issue. This isn't something I just want to jump to the any conclusions on. So we took our time. We had a discussion. We had the police in the room. We had the women who were most concerned in the room. We had RAFTA part of the discussion. I did not talk to Dan, but I talked to the staff that managed the corridor. We had others in the room. We asked PED Bike and Trails Committee to say, what do you think? Where should we put the lighting? And there wasn't consensus. And what we found was when we really discussed the issue, a lot of the women and the board agreed, said Rio Grande Trail is not where we want to light. It's just not the safest place. There's not enough eyes on Rio Grande Trail. So let's put it where we knew that there was an issue between Village and Cowan and some other things. And yes, because it's CDOT right away, we do have to have a consultant. CDOT requires that. And I think we identified some specific areas, and then we said, let's identify some safe routes around town, see where our deficiencies are, and then invest in those. So I think it was a good discussion. I think it's going to improve safety. But nonetheless, obviously, safety is a clear priority. So thank you.
First, I just want to make it clear that it's not an either-or with a Starry Night and safe passages with our Dark Sky Initiative and carefully designed lighting that is pointed at the ground, does not wash out, is not pointed at the sky. You can prevent light pollution, which is very serious. Honestly, it has both ecological and psychological consequences. So we want to be careful with our lighting. We want to be smart about it, but we can have safe lighting and have the stars in the sky. Those are not mutually exclusive. Also, I want to say that culturally, it's common to tell women and girls that their clothing can increase their risk of attack, or that it's culturally appropriate for women to not have to walk alone at night. And I disagree with this sentiment. And in general, the way that crimes against women are diminished and not brought forward. And part of that is because it's very difficult to talk about, both from the women that it's on behalf of the women it's affected and communities in general. It's not an easy topic. It's not a comfortable topic. It's a difficult topic. And our community has the opportunity to make progress on this issue where others have not. So I think it's really important that we make community safety for the entire community a priority. I do think that we should light the Rio Grande Trail with Dark Sky Initiative lighting. I do think that's in the master plan of RAFTA, but it was farther out in their plan because it's kind of an expensive undertaking. But my understanding is that that's come forward for them as a priority as well. It's not the only place in town that needs lighting, but it is a primary corridor. And most of my travel in Carbondale is as a pedestrian or on bicycle, and I use the Rio Grande Trail every single day and often at night, especially when the sun is going down early. Also, we have working people that get off the bus at 10:30, 11:30 at night, and it's not fair to subject them to an unsafe corridor that connects to the downtown. So I think it's a top priority. I think we have the resources to take care of it, and I've heard from many community members, if we don't, that they're going to put renegade lighting out there. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Since it is such a sensitive and important topic, I hope you can take some of the views you've heard here and maybe balance it with your friends and relatives, too, that want to continue one side or the other. And I think it's a way to disseminate it into the community. So it's good to see it done here. I want to welcome KDNK listeners again, people who have just joined us, that you're tuning in to a forum on the mayoral candidates with the election coming up soon. You've missed some important parts, but we still have some good questions and responses to come. The one next that we'd like to start with, this would start with Dan, I believe. We've heard some responses that touch on broad changes and also some very specific projects you all would like to implement as mayor. But we'd like to ask you, can you tell us now how you plan to achieve these items as part of a 7-member board?
Dan? Therein lies the trick. I remember when I was on Glenwood City Council probably 15 years ago, I was the one vote a lot of times. I was 28 or 29 years old when I was elected, and it was just no fun being on a board where I had different viewpoints. And that hit home with me. It really struck me that we function as a board or we don't function, not only in making decisions, but having a strong communication. So for me, as I said this spring, I don't have a lot of, I don't have an axe to grind. I'm not a one-issue candidate that I want to get this accomplished. And now that's even more so as acting mayor. I want us to function as well as we can, and I want to take the ideas that come forward either from the board or from the public and help make them successful. And I think that's the job of the mayor. Having said that, it's also the job to find that common agreement. Where does that come from? It comes from trust. It comes from open and honest communication. It comes from a lot of communication, whether it's having coffee with the right people at the right time, talking to each other. Katrina and I and the rest of the board talk probably not as often as I would like, but that's how we function well. I've had a taste of dysfunctional boards, and I want no part of it. So really one of my priorities as being mayor is for us to function well. And it's boring. It's about process. But that's my priority as mayor.
We've heard some responses from each of you that touch on broad changes and also some very specific projects that you would like to see implemented as mayor. But can you tell us how you would plan to achieve these items as part of a 7-member board?
Sure. I mean, obviously, we have all these very important things coming forward that we need to take some action on, from renewable energy to senior resources. And it is a board decision. And I think there is frequently some really strong civil discourse that draws out differences of opinion. What I've really found is that when there's a healthy disagreement and a civil dialogue, that we actually get to a place that's smarter, that the position that may or may not be extreme is sort of tempered by the opposition, and through that conversation we get to a place that is a common ground. And I would say that that's the most important thing, is seeking the common ground, and that's not only on this board, but we work with many other agencies. We work with the county commissioners, we work with state officials, and sometimes politically we are completely on opposite sides of the viewpoint, but there is still a common ground. And I think in this, you know, with the lighting, there was a lot of different discussion, but there were some things that we could all agree on, or not specifically with the lighting, but the safety issue, like increasing patrols. And, you know, so there's a place, I think, to find a solution that everyone can be happy with, that maybe doesn't include everything that people wanted, but maybe that's okay. It kind of slows it down, makes things a little more middle ground, which also decreases their impact sometimes. So sunshine laws prevent 3 trustees from talking outside of a meeting, or 3 elected officials. It makes it an illegal meeting, but 2 can. And the part of the process of building consensus is supposed to be sitting down with other elected officials one-on-one and kind of talking about it. That's a difficult process for me, because I like everything being on the record and I like everything being in the public dialogue. And so that aspect of the system that is from local politics all the way up to federal politics is uncomfortable for me. But reaching out and making those connections is really important. Thanks.
Well, I'm famous for being part of many healthy disagreements. And but, you know, the issues that we face today are important issues. The board, it will be looking at, as we've been mentioning tonight, housing, infrastructure, economic development, safety, sustainability. Who in the world is going to be against those issues? So that's a start for creating consensus within the board. The mayor is the facilitator. People, the board will discuss it, but what my plan is to have the board discuss it, but I want to be able to, before we discuss anything that's that important, that the town already has input on this, so that the board already knows how the town feels and maybe what direction they want to go. It's critical to me that the town, that the citizens, that the taxpayers, the residents, the non-residents be part of these talks, because if we don't include the town, it gets back to everything that my whole campaign is about, and that's inclusiveness versus exclusiveness.
Okay. I think we have two questions left, so let's get to them, and maybe we'll have some time after to interact with the candidates as individuals. But this question starts with Katrina, excuse me. It starts out that this valley and Carbondale residents in particular are very environmentally aware. Did I mention CMC has a 4-year sustainability program too? Well, we'd like to know, what is the opinion of each candidate on the role of local government? Does local government have a role to play in the implementation of large-scale sustainability projects? One example, should there be a local recycling drop-off location overseen by the town of Carbondale?
Great question. They did do an assessment on the cost of a program like that. It was $100,000 for a recycling drop-off program overseen by the town of Carbondale. I don't think that's necessarily like the end of the conversation. I think we could maybe have a program that is more limited than that, that wouldn't be that expensive, that could be supported by our waste diversion fund that is our bag tax. So I have a degree, bachelor's in sustainability from Colorado Mountain College that I got right here in Carbondale. The sustainability aspects that are really important to me are energy, transportation, food systems, water protection, sustainable economic development. And I think that, the role of government is and should be determined by the people. And so if Carbondale doesn't want its leadership to take us in that direction, then, you know, I think that's the most important feedback, is whether the body is representing the will of the people. For example, I and Garfield Clean Energy sit on the board with a representative from the town of Parachute. And what Parachute tells its elected officials that it wants is very different than what Carbondale tells its elected officials. So, but personally, and in the role that I've been in, I think it's very important for our government, our local government, to be a leader in sustainability. You know, we're talking about the long-term health, safety, and well-being of our community. And if our environment is toxic, if our water is polluted, if our air isn't clean, I mean, we are directly tied to this landscape. And if we don't take long-term action to ensure the sustainability of our community, we won't sustain. So I think that you know, in our policies as we move forward, like, for example, requiring, I'll finish there. Thanks.
Katrina, you made a good point. And that's something that we really haven't discussed is yes, this town is heavily in support of environmental sustainability, as most of us are. But there is a large element in this town that still needs to be convinced. And what we need to do is to be able to have the freedom, so the board will have the freedom to be able to work on some of these projects. We need to educate the entire town of what the benefits of a good environmental program will do for them. We've done a real good job. There's CLEAR. My next-door neighbor is Julia, the head of the of the environmental board, and I had an extremely long conversation with her, and that there's many things that we can do without burdening the taxpayers. You know, the first thing we talk about whenever we need something is, well, let's put a tax so we can buy it. And I think that if we really, you know, once many years ago when I was on the board, or before I left the board, it was said that Carbondale has the talent to create an economic development plan that will suit the whole town. And it's the same thing with the environmental plan. You know, if we have the communication, if we have the education, this is what I was telling Julia, if you have the education, because she said on a survey she put out that only 400 people responded. That's not very good when you consider that there's at least 6,500, 7,000 voters in this town. So, you know, there it's a job that we need to, you know, we need to concentrate on. It's going to be a job that's going to take a while. But before we do that, we need to plan. You know, one thing I learned as a labor organizer is you can't organize unless you're organized.
My answer is an emphatic heck yes. You know, that's one of the reasons why I love local government. We can do whatever we want because we're in control of our own destiny. I'm proud to say I was one of the early advisors to CMC's creation of the sustainability program, and it was fun and very informative, and I enjoyed it. I think Katrina's right. With specifically to a recycling drop-off fund, I think there's a great rational nexus of using the bag fund to develop that. We used to have a recycling center here, but it disappeared for a couple of different reasons. But I also think that if we as the town government is going to be involved, we need to be bold, particularly here in Carbondale, and that we shouldn't necessarily just invest in the status quo. We should be moving the needle. We should be incubating the big change. And I think CLEAR and CORE have been successful in that with probably electric vehicle transportation is probably the greatest example. So we need to be strategic and bold so that we're not just funding something, we're really creating change. And I think we're trying to do that with the carbon tax, but we failed pretty miserably. So we got to go back to the drawing board and figure out how do we do it? What's the next opportunity? Should we be a leader in that? Absolutely, yes. Carbondale supports it. I think that in and itself, we've already seen it's been great economic development for the town of Carbondale. We just had the state director of economic, Office of Economic Development, and she was quite impressed with what we've done. So I say we carry on that torch. So thank you.
We're getting close to the ending time we had set, so let's see if we can incorporate this last question into your closing statement. Give it some thought. You'll have 2 minutes. The last question was something to this effect. Would you tell us what sets you apart from other candidates in regards to your ability to bring people together, to work towards consensus, and to honor inclusive, process-driven solutions? But just take a second, if you would. And where are we at now? We're at... back to Ed, I think, starting us off for a closing statement, up to 2 minutes. So this is your chance to...
Can you repeat the question?
The question just asks you to tell us what sets you apart from the other candidates in terms of your ability to bring people together, to work towards consensus, and to honor inclusive, process-driven solutions. What sets you apart in those?
Well, I believe that this is an ability that I have that I didn't know I had. I was asked by the rafter drivers to help them organize a union. And, you know, the recession wiped me out. I took a job with rafter, and I used to be on the board of rafter for 6 years, and I told the leadership of rafter, you know, I just want to work here. You know, I want to keep a low profile. I don't want people to know what I did for rafter. You know, I just want to be one of the drivers. But obviously, a couple of people knew what I had done, and I was asked to lead the union. And then I found out that I had organizational skills that I never really thought I had because I never had the opportunity to really use these skills. Then I found out that I was an incredibly strong negotiator when I negotiated a historical wage benefits for the rafter drivers. And I believe that these qualities that I have are unique and not found in this town. And in some cases, I've been told it's not in this area. So, yes, I have incredible strengths in reference to bringing people together, talking about the issues, and coming up with solutions. I'm action-oriented, and I believe that's what sets me apart from my opponents. Thank you so much.
I think it's a great question because I do think that there's a difference between running for mayor and running for a trustee. It's a different job description, so it does require a different skill set. I'm a little embarrassed to admit that I think I've come to the realization that I am somewhat of a Boy Scout. I've been called that in the past, and I'm kind of coming to terms with that. I'm boring. I like process. I like supporting the people I'm around. I like fixing things, and I'm okay with that. A little over a year and a half ago, I started really focusing on my day and how I'm going to go about it. And I started saying something every day that I'm committed to empowering people by listening and consistently demonstrating integrity and authenticity. And that's what I try and live by every day. I think that's what it takes to be a mayor, is that you're demonstrating you are a leader of leaders. You are an organizer. You have to have strong organizational skills. You have to be committed to listening and hearing both points of view. You have to be open-minded and thick-skinned so that when things don't go your way, or if there's a disagreement, that you can still move forward. And I think that is somewhat unique. It's part of me being a Boy Scout. And I like doing it. So I've really enjoyed being mayor. It's allowed me to be who I really am, I think. And I'm ready to continue. So again, I'd ask for your vote. Thank you.
If I may add, I've known Dan for, what did we say the other day, 12 years, something like that?
Something like that.
And he may be a lot of things, but he's no Boy Scout.
I'd like to thank everyone for this opportunity to have this really important dialogue with my colleagues. And in closing, I just want to say that I was a community organizer and volunteer before joining the Board of Trustees in 2014, and I will be after too. And I do think that community-oriented leadership that I think both the other candidates touched on is so key. I think what I bring to the table is a sensitive and intelligent compassion and empathy for what people are experiencing in our community, a willingness to look at some of the really difficult problems that we face and push to find solutions to those from a grassroots level. And I would go to any length to protect our watershed. I have extensive knowledge of protections that are needed. I was part of writing our source water protection plan, and to me that issue is so forward that I could almost say that I'm obsessed with protection of our water. So those are the things that I think are my strengths. As I said, I have a background in sustainability, and I think taking our community in a more sustainable direction as we face an uncertain future in so many ways is really important to keep us healthy and strong as a community into the future. And I have a long range vision, I think, in terms of 150 years, especially when we're going to upgrade water infrastructure and things like that. You know, we really have to think forward. So I really appreciate the opportunity to serve the community. It has been a really powerful experience to learn what really makes our community tick and be a part of some really positive change. And that's why I'm here, is to be a part of positive change. So I would appreciate your vote. Thanks.
Well, this officially brings the official part of this forum to an end. But I hope, as I mentioned, you'll continue to talk with your friends and relatives, share some of the discussion and your reflections and your judgments as well as you can. I know I've noticed over the years that if I'm in a discussion in the evening, even if it goes late at night and it's a good discussion, I always wake up early in the morning refreshed. And I think I'll wake up refreshed tomorrow morning. So thank you for this. And if the candidates are willing to interact with you one-on-one, you know, while you're here, please do that and ask some of your specific questions if they're willing to respond. But keep in mind other people might want to do the same thing too, so just keep it short if you can. Thank you all for coming.